You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 511. It's the 27th of June, 2016. On the podcast today, I have CEO of Codal Minerals, KOD, Bernard Aylward, talks about the company's strategic shift in focus towards assets, gold assets in Africa. Also on the podcast, I have veteran city PR man David Bick, who chairs Square One Consulting, where he acts for numerous high-profile clients, particularly football clubs, in the throes of a takeover. And David covers Brexit. Also, small-cap commentator, authority, Doc Holliday, talks about Chariot Gold, Hummingbird, Keffi Minerals, Life Science Development, and Prospects Oil and Gas. And today's penny stock with potential is suggested by Revstar, who goes with Greatland Gold. And do you know what? There's a theme, you know, incidental theme running through today's podcast, and that is gold. And I tweeted out earlier, I'm thinking gold, because when there are times of uncertainty, it's always good to have a gold stock in your portfolio. So it's just a case of hunting around, looking for that gold stock. And I see this uncertainty, not just in the UK, translating across continents to Europe and to America. Of course, if they don't hike interest rates and the dollar stays low there, then gold stocks will rise. So it's always good to have a gold stock in your portfolio. Anyway, I'll give the reasons why Revstar picked Greatland Gold later.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chief Executive Officer of Codal Minerals, as KOD. Ticker, share price 0.04 pence, market cap around about 1.6 million. Bernard Aylward, thanks for joining me, Bernard.
Thanks, Justin. Pleasure to be here.
Now, I've seen Codal mentioned on social media quite a lot. I'm not aware of the story. I'm not completely over it. So for me, for my benefit, and for the benefit of listeners who've not heard of Codal, can you give us a brief outline as to what you're all about, please, Bernard?
Yep, sure, Justin. Well, Codal Minerals, an AIM-listed company, recently acquired a suite of West African gold exploration projects from Taruga Gold, an ASX-listed company. This acquisition is a bit of change of direction for Codal and a bit of a refreshment of the story. Codal originally listed on some exploration and development assets in Norway, but we have subsequently changed direction and are looking to move into the gold area, and we've picked up what we think are a great series of assets in West Africa, including exploration projects 100% owned by Codal, as well as some pretty exciting joint ventures with major companies.
Okay, all right. So why the change in focus, Bernard?
Well, the assets in Norway were phosphate and iron ore projects, and given the current climate for those projects, they were undervalued and very difficult to generate value for those projects. The company looked at this as a great opportunity to get value for our shareholders, as well as we are retaining those assets. And we think that in the future they will have value for our shareholders, but in the current market, they weren't really the assets to drive the company.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, gold, I'm looking today in the markets here. A lot of gold stocks are rising. They did end of last week, and this is a huge uncertainty around the, you know, global macroeconomics tailwinds. I mean, you've got the Fed out there, you know, threatening to raise rates, and now people are saying this Brexit move will put that into question. And of course, everyone's safe haven is gold, so it's definitely now the commodity in vogue, isn't it? So let's talk about some of these assets. What do we know about them?
Well, Justin, they're assets located in Cote d'Ivoire and Mali in the West African gold belt, and it's a very well mineralised district. We've been very careful in our selection of ground. We've taken a very strong technical approach. My history has been extensive experience in West Africa. We've made discoveries for other companies, and we put these projects together originally as Taruga and now as Kodal over the last few years. And part of what we've been able to demonstrate is that our model of ground selection, technical oversight, early exploration work has generated for us interest from some pretty serious major gold producers and explorers. And we've got joint ventures that are going to spend up to $4.7 million on our ground. So we're quite well supported and well funded to maintain a strong exploration. With our joint venture partners, Newcrest Mining, major gold, the major gold Australian producer, and Resolute Mining, another significant producer, particularly in West Africa.
Yeah, well, just saying, I mean, you know, to flesh out, give a bit of colour to these companies. Newcrest, a big company, isn't it? Is it about $13 billion, you were saying?
Yes.
Market cap, Aussie?
Newcrest is the biggest Australian gold producer. It's got mines throughout Australia, Papua New Guinea. It runs the Bonikro mine in Cote d'Ivoire, and major gold producer. Market cap about $13 billion, I think. And Resolute, again, operating mines in Mali, operating mines in Australia, and development projects in Cote d'Ivoire and Ghana, really demonstrate that we're dealing with some serious companies, both producers, both serious explorers, both willing to spend the money on our ground.
Yeah, and so what's the details here? How much what's the details of these JVs?
Well, for the Resolute JV, they have to spend US$3 million to earn 75%. Once they've earned in, we are free carried through to the development of a mine. And that covers three exploration licenses in Cote d'Ivoire, approximately 1,200 square kilometres of ground in very, very prospective areas. For the Newcrest joint venture, they've joint ventured into one of our licenses, the Dabakala project. They have to spend US$1.7 million to earn 75% of that project. In both cases, the partners are active. They're exploring now. And we anticipate that they'll be going through to completing the joint ventures.
So they've a combined spend of just under $5 million, have they?
Exactly. US.
Yeah. That's good. Okay.
Yeah, so it's great for us.
Yeah,
we also have projects in Mali that we continue to explore. And I just quickly mention our most exciting project in Mali, the Nangoloso project, where we've completed drilling previously. It's very strong geochemistry, very, very well mineralised area, a lot of artisanal mining, and we've had early drill intersections including 3 metres at 7 grams from shallow depths, 21 metres. We've got 21 metres at 1.25, 3 metres at 7.8, a metre at 7.8, all in early stage air core drilling, and the indications are we're in a strongly mineralised district. So we're very excited about Nangoloso in Mali, on top of our other projects that we've got throughout Mali and Cote d'Ivoire.
Yeah, and so what's your background? How did you come to be involved with Kodal, Bernard?
Well, I'm a geologist. I've been working in West Africa since 2006. My early history is as a gold specialist geologist in Australia. I've worked for various companies. We've made quite a few discoveries with the teams I've been working with. In West Africa, I was the general manager for Azuma Resources, and we built the gold resource base there to well over a plus 1.5 million ounces of gold. We've made, and then I developed this project for Taruga Gold. We acquired the ground. We've completed the early stage exploration. So really, my background, geologist, project acquisition, exploration activity.
Marvellous stuff. Well, I think that's, you know, it's more than enough information to be got on with. So if anyone needs any more convincing, Bernard, could you give us three reasons why an investor should put you on their Vox Markets watch list?
Yeah, well, look, thanks, Justin. I think straight away we'd be telling people to have a look at our proven exploration model. We've acquired ground. We've completed early stage exploration. We've attracted major joint venture partners with serious money being spent on our ground. We've got an exciting portfolio of projects throughout a very well mineralized region of West Africa. We've got exploration drill intersections as well as strong geochemistry. We expect to make discoveries on our ground. And finally, as you said early on, Justin, the gold market is getting stronger. I think it's a good time for people to be investing in gold exploration because it can certainly deliver very encouraging results and good returns upon success.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even earlier this morning, I did tweet out saying, just a simple tweet saying, I'm thinking gold. And, it's just the uncertainty of the market. So timeline-wise and news flow-wise, what can we expect next from
Kodal? Well, what we're doing right now, Justin, is we're working on our Nangoloso project. So we're undertaking a program of trenching where we're just firming up some targets for drilling. We'll then be continuing some air core drilling at Nangoloso. We'll be undertaking some early stage geochemistry work in our own Cote d'Ivoire projects. And then we are also seeing our joint venture partners spending money on our ground. So we're anticipating news flow from our work and their work.
Excellent stuff. Bernard, thank you very much for coming on, and hopefully speak again soon.
Okay, thanks for your time, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is veteran City PR man David Bick. He chairs Square One Consulting, where he acts for numerous high-profile clients, particularly football clubs, in the throes of a takeover. Thank you for coming on, David.
Good morning, Justin.
Now, let's talk Brexit, because I know you've got some views on it. And first and foremost, we've seen the markets, they tanked on Friday initially, and then they came back, and then we saw the European markets tanking more, which suggests to me that they have bigger worries than us. I mean, what's your thoughts, initial thoughts on Brexit there, David?
I don't think, as far as the markets and the economy are concerned, there's any need for any great drama, to be frank. And I wasn't surprised to see the FTSE 100 recover to be up on the week last week. Mm-hmm. Right now it's off about 1.5%. Some of the currencies are off between 1.5% and 2%. So there's a bit of uncertainty, and that's completely understandable when you're likely to be in the throes of two leadership elections for the two main parties in the next few weeks and months. But overall, I think the Remain camp massively overdid the scaremongering. Not only do I think it was a bad tactic, as has shown up in the voting figures, but it was also saying things to people that weren't going to happen, like an emergency budget. So, I think it all just needs to calm down. I think we'll manage the exit perfectly well. We're a big trading partner with Europe, and I don't really see that changing materially.
Yeah, I did think that emergency budget that was mentioned by George Osborne as a really below-the-belt scare tactic, you know? And I thought, why is he, to me, a Chancellor should try and keep calm and be a reassuring voice. And that there was just basically trying to put the cat amongst the pigeons, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And I think you've just got to put that behind us now. I mean, he made a perfectly reasonable statement this morning on the back of the governor of the Bank of England statement on Friday. But I still think that the backcloth to this, Justin, is the media like the drama. To some extent, the politicians like the drama. You know, the general population just wants to get back to business as usual. And the quicker the media and the politicians understand that, the better for all concerned.
Yeah, and do you know what I mentioned on a weekend podcast that I said, you know, when there's bad things happening, the media like to, you know, drag up sensationalist bad news. Like they mentioned these American banks and HSBC as well, moving people abroad. But let's be honest, there are people moving to and from their offices all the time anyway. You know, it's not going to happen. If it does happen, it's not going to happen like on the result of the vote. Like I said, business is always evolving. And so if some people move from, you know, London, some other business may take its place. It's not a big deal. But there's been rumours now that we may dip into recession. Do you feel that's the case?
Well, I think if we were going to dip into recession, I think that was going to happen anyway. I don't think that's remotely going to be part and parcel of the outcome of the referendum. I think what's more important here is actually political, in the sense that I think this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. We're going to see a movement in our politics. You know, part of this vote was about people feeling disconnected from the people who ruled them. The rulers have now got to get that. And I think otherwise we're going to see a completely different landscape as far as the political parties are concerned. I mean, if the Labour Party aren't careful, this could be the death knell of them. But I think they've also got to get that people expect different things from their politicians now. They expect their politicians to tell them things straight, and they're fed up with evasion on answers, and they're fed up with not being told what they believe to be the truth. So I think we're going to see a movement over the years ahead into a new form of politics, but I certainly don't see why this should damage this country's economic prospects.
Yeah, I know, you know, Boris was saying that he still sees us trading, you know, freely within the European bloc there. I mean, do you think that's realistic without, you know, free movement of labour, which is a policy? A lot of people voted leave on the immigration card. But I mean, do you think, you know, Europe, because I think genuinely Europe need to trade with us. They have to trade with us, you know, because their economies are not as strong as people think. And I think they need to do this deal with us, don't you?
I entirely agree with you, Justin. First of all, you know, we have a trade deficit with Europe. They sell more to us than goes the other way. But the overall level of trading is obviously important with the context of all of our trading. So, you know, that's going to continue. It's the politician's job to make sure that they don't become an obstacle to that.
Yeah, do you know what? That's spot on. And that's the issue, I think, is that, you know, this, you know, original trade agreement was for trade, for businesses, to help business. And what we've seen is it's politicians and politics get in the way of that. Now, if Europeans are saying again now that they're going to, you know, do something to stop Britain trading, again, that's the reason why we're not happy with the deal, is because politicians are getting in the way of businesses. Isn't that the case?
Yes, I think it is the case. And I think what people have become increasingly frustrated by was that the people making decisions like this were neither elected nor accountable. And I think that goes right to the nub of what the problem is, or what the problem has been. You know, let's be clear, you know, this country and the people in it are not in large measure anti-European at all. What we had become was anti-EU, and the way that rules were being handed down that didn't take account of the practical realities on the ground. And again, you know, whatever businesses said, you know, large or small, during the referendum campaign, what they will now be after is stability, the absence, as far as possible, of any tariffs, and just the ability to trade freely one with another. I think if the politicians evolve a deal like that, then we're going to be in a much better position than we were beforehand.
Yeah, and so as an investor, people, you know, being a bit scared by these markets now, I mean, do you see this, you know, I mean, is this an opportunity to buy here, or would you sit and wait? What would you think is going to, how does it play out? How long does it take?
I think there are two factors. If we were heading into some sort of mild recession anyway, then the markets will reprice accordingly. But equally well, insofar as currencies and markets have been affected just by the referendum, that will recover. And I think a lot of people will ultimately see this as a buying opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, it's odd. It's funny. I was saying on the podcast for a while, very rarely do we have a signpost which, you know, of a date that could signify, you know, turbulence and volatility in the market. But we had it this time. And I was saying for weeks, I said, listen, April's been a good month, and it traditionally is a good month for stocks. You know, I said, you know, top slice, take a bit of cash, because there will be volatility ahead. So I think any, you know, shrewd investor out there was probably sitting on a bit of cash before this. And I, you know, as a long-term investor, as, you know, most people should be, this, I think, you know, is an opportunity here to sort of start looking for bargains. Don't you think?
Well, I think longer term, we're going to have a more stable political environment. Our economy will grow. The markets will grow with it. And I think, you know, overall, the future is bright.
Yeah, marvellous. David, lovely to speak to you. Hopefully speak again soon.
Thanks very much, Justin. Have a good day.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Small Cap Authority. It's Doc Holliday. You all right, fella?
Hi, mate. Okay, good to be back.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Even though it's been, a week since we talked, a lot has happened, you know? And they say a long week in politics, a week. It's even longer in the markets because it's been a really event, full of events. The market's dropped off. I mean, there's people wanting another referendum. What's your thoughts? My thoughts are, let's just get on with it. What's your thoughts?
It's been a major upset, hasn't it? You know, so naturally there's going to be some outfall. I know there's been a lot of comments and personal exchanges between lots and lots of people, families and friends and various other things. You know, you've just got to suck it up. The result is what it is, and you've got to move on and get on with it. You know, our job in the market is to try to find opportunities to make some money and enrich our lives, and you're not going to get that from bickering and arguing over things that we have no control over. The big shout for a second referendum just is complete horseshit. You know, the people that had petitioned, I think the vast majority or a huge number of the proportion of those people that had signed that petition were non UK kind of residents. So I'm not, or allegedly so. It's just all a lot of twaddle. Time to move on. Look for opportunities. Make money. Be happy.
Yeah, and so what's your strategy here? Do you think that, you know, are you still a bit cautious there? Because, I mean, you know, uncertainty in the markets, we've got a lot of that uncertainty around. I mean, are you still sort of a bit cautious?
Yeah, I'm always a bit cautious. You've got to be a bit cautious. You know, the day that you get up and you stop being a bit cautious is the day that you stand to lose a vast amount of cash because you've lost respect for it. We work really hard to get to where we are, to have that ability to be able to do what we're doing. Only a fool really will be separated from their money quickly. And I think you've got to have a healthy level of respect for what you're doing. You've got to have a healthy level of respect for the risk and the environment that we operate. But ultimately, we've got to look for opportunities, make money, and be happy. And if we're doing that day to day, then we life becomes a better place to be. Like I say, there's a lot of people that are upset on the back of the referendum. I personally voted out. Again, I've taken a bit of flack from some people who believe the Remain vote would have been the right answer. And I hold a very long-winded view that perhaps I won't share with you today, but I think we're likely to have a recession. I think that was going to happen regardless of the outcome. I think taking back the reins from the country is what we need, and I think at some point people will appreciate the decision that's been made today. As it is, there's huge levels of uncertainty. British banks have been downgraded, house builders have been coming off hard, and the FTSE's it's not doing particularly well. So it's a tough day, it's a tough week, but it's a new dawn as well. So we love to see what we can do with these opportunities that we're going to be presented with.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's have a look at some of those opportunities. What stocks are you looking at the moment?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm sort of looking at a lot of the same kind of companies that I've been looking at for quite some time. But, you know, obviously, Chalat Gold's had a bit of a move today. I believe that that's a company, one of the only gold companies that's not kind of budged at all over the last 2 or 3 months, given that gold's come up quite dramatically from sort of $1,050, $1,100, $1,200, $1,250, $1,300. And, you know, the strategists out there now suggest that that if this level sort of breaks higher, that we're going to go to $1,580. And then you start hearing all the noise and the quacking of $2,000 and beyond. So, you know, that's the way these things usually play out. And I would anticipate that would be the same. So Chalat Gold, all in sustainable cost, $605. They've done the feasibility study, spent about 4 or 5 years, you know, carrying that out. That's all been done. And the company's announced that the resource, recently announced that they've got a resource upgrade. The life of the mine's going to be a bit longer than what they anticipated. The costs have declined. All of the kind of right things you want to see from a gold company. It's got a pretty big resource, and they're quite confident that they're going to be able to find a partner, and preferably out in China. I think if you look at the company, people involved, and what whether they're aiming for is to try and find an Asian partner to come on board and support them through.
Yeah, do you know what? I think gold is a good play. I mean, I've got two gold stocks at the moment, and that's Hummingbird and Keffi. And I think what's going to happen, like you said, you know, I think we are going to see a dip into recession, and I think it's going to be a problem all round. I mean, in the US as well. And that's the reason why I think they'll hold off on the interest rate hike. Because, you know, and like you say, we've been now, what, since the crash, since 2008, 2009. It's been a long time coming. We've been in a recovery for, what, 6, 7 years, and we are due a dip in the markets, you know, whether people like it or not, and we haven't really fully recovered. So I think, if anything, this will be, you know, the sell-off we need to get us again, to get, you know, where people can sort of see levels of bargains, there are lots of bargains out there, and start buying, money coming back in, you know, and I think, and for that reason, I think gold is definitely a good place to be, and like I said, there's many to pick, Chariot. There's loads of them out there, but yeah, gold, you know, you've got to have that in a couple of gold stocks, haven't you, in your portfolio, really?
Oh, definitely, look, absolutely, and I agree with you on all of what you've just said. You know, I think Keffi presents a great opportunity. There's a lot of people looking at Sylvania Platinum presenting a good opportunity. Seems to be some kind of selling going on there, or whatever it is that's holding that price within a certain kind of range. You know, Chariot's, as I say, it's one that I've talked about 2 or 3 months ago. My view's never changed on it. The gold price has changed quite dramatically. They've since announced that they've got 7 million ounces of resource, the all-in sustainable cost, you know, $600. So huge, huge upside potential. The CapEx is big on it. So, you know, you want to look for the risk, your caveats, you know, the positivity with a little bit of balance and negativity, and that is that the CapEx is pretty big. So it needs a partner with deep pockets to come on board. But, you know, these guys will come to companies that have got JORC compliant resources and feasibility studies all carried out. They're not going to come in beforehand. You're not going to get kind of banking debts or any kind of decent terms for debt or for what to finance these companies without having that kind of feasibility study carried out and a JORC compliant resource. So this seems to have everything that you're looking for. Big margins, but, you know, as I say, it's going to need somebody with deep pockets to come on board. I'm sure there's somebody out there. Otherwise, why else get to this point of the cycle? It's just whether people are going to start to want to invest heavily into gold, given, you know, the result from last week, given the state of the markets right now. I would argue that you're going to see more people prepared to stuff money into these kind of companies than perhaps into kind of house builders or banks or whatever it might be that are taking the heat right now in the market.
Yeah. Okay, so that's gold. Get one of those gold stocks in your portfolio. Anything else you're looking at the moment?
Always. I mean, you know, it's never stop looking, do we? That's the main thing. I think last time we spoke, I'd mentioned Life, a Jim Mellon Denimake company. I didn't at that time, mention that I'd filed a TR1. I felt it was relevant to wait, let the market have it confirmed before I said anything on the podcast. So, yeah, obviously, since we last spoke, it's gone into the public domain that I bought 3% of that company. I think the business is priced to do absolutely nothing. They divest their assets for $1.5 million. I think that Denham and Mitchell are taking $45,000 and $25,000 respective. It's hardly a great deal of cash out of the company. They're probably only overhead to sort of corporate fees. The way that these kind of deals are put together, Jim will put some kind of a loan instrument in place. They nearly always do these things at a massive premium. The company directors are often, when they rescue these shells, they're obviously putting some of their own cash in early doors. So they look to go on a ratcheted approach of growth and finance, and that finance comes in. As I say, you look at Plethora, a company that was trading at sort of below pennies, was it 3-4p, went and did a deal at 11.5. So, you know, I'm not anticipating something like that. It's got a £900,000 market cap. It's probably still got a bit of cash in the bank. Jim Mellon, you know, is on the Sunday Times Rich List. Denham Ake is his managing director at his private company, Burnbrae. As I said to you last week, you know, I emailed the company to let them know that I was going to be filing a TR1. And I got a kickback, a postmaster email to say that email hadn't got through to the company, and that come from the Burnbrae server. So it suggests to me that they're going to put one of their in-house stocks companies into this vehicle, and we'll see where it goes. I'm extremely bullish on it, but let's wait and see. One of the good things about any kind of biotech industry and life science business is when you get these big downturns, as we saw over the last couple of days, they're generally quite well insulated. It's an area, really, fintech, biotech, pharma type area, which does well in times of these austere markets, should we say. So, again, don't have a great deal of concern, but other than feel quite confident at 900,000, it's got a lot of mileage in.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it had a little spike, in fact, round about your TR1 notification, and it's come back a bit. But like I said, sometimes, you know, you've got to look, always be aware of spikes, but I mean, you've got to look at the market cap here. Like you said, it's under a million. You've got Jim Mellon connected to it. And like I said, he's well connected. So, you know, it's you know, decent little, interest here. I mean, thing is, how far can this go wrong, you know? It's got cash, it's got Jim Mellon.
To caveat that, you know, what was said already about life, it's the downside is if they don't do a deal by the 5th of October, then it'll be list potentially, and that's the risk I guess you've got to look at. The fact that Jim's involved, well, he's been involved in lots of companies as an investor or as a non-executive director or as an executive director, and some of them, you know, haven't all gone swimmingly well. The thing that interests me is Denham Ake is the managing director at Burnbrae, is a non-executive director here. Jim's a non-executive director here, and I think it's Mitchell Aland is the I think he's an ex-nomad or a nomad, you know, or something like that. So they've got the people involved in the company have got all of the knowledge and insight that was needed to be able to acquire or vend in a decent little business. You know, the shares have spiked up. As soon as there's any kind of significant buying, the market makers have very little stock. So you're going to get these wild swings in pricing. And that'll be, you know, 2.5p to 3.5p, and it could well be back down to 2p. It could be, you know, it could be 10p. That's the problem with these companies that have only got a low free float. I think about 55% of the company now will be out of the public hands. They've only got 37 million shares in issue. I think they traded about 10 or something like that, 10 million shares over those sessions when I was buying. So, you know, there's not a great deal sloshing about, so we're going to see wild kind of moves in it. If you get into the money, take a little bit off the table, you know, protect your capital. It's the same old, never do it any different. Scale it, scale in, scale out, protect your capital, try and give yourself a decent exposure to the upside, should it come.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And any other stocks? What are you else looking at?
Well, I mean, like I say, there's a lot of value in companies that are listed out there at the minute. You've got you've obviously got the gold plays, as you suggested. There's now an argument that people should be looking at perhaps some of these oil plays that are in better shape than perhaps the market's giving them credit for. I think the one message I would send out there is just keep a bit of powder dry. Don't rush out to spend all of your cash. Keep a little bit to one side. You never really can tell just how badly it's going to get. You know, I had a chat on the phone whilst I was on the train down to the city last Thursday to the CEO of Prospects Oil and Gas. They've just done an acquisition on an asset and a company, a JV with Hutton, I think they're called, Hutton Poland. He seems quite interested in what's going on. It's not done well since it come to market, really. They got into the company about a year ago. I think they raised a bit of cash at 2p. A year later, they've just raised another 1.75 million, I think it was, at 1p. So naturally, so far, and you know, to date, it's not been the best of kind of investments. However, it's taken quite a lot of time to get these assets into the company, and I think that's what's, you know, where the holdup's been. They've done a deal now. They're up and running. I know from speaking to, you know, a number of people who've been out to Poland over the last few years, because naturally there's been some major oil companies and a lot of small ones that have operated out there. It's quite a sophisticated environment, you know, they operate actually better than a lot of these kind of companies would do in the rest of Europe. From what I've seen, the images, the pictures, and the kind of sites and operations they've got out there, it's really advanced, really clean, up to date. You know, the working practices are good. I think people will be surprised if they have a little bit of look out there. You know, a bit of a strike, a bit of a find. I think it's going to do well for a company like Prospects Oil and Gas. You know, they've got a 2 million pound market cap and 1.85 million quid in the bank, you know, allegedly. So, you know, obviously we're making some suggestion that's what's there. I don't exactly know. I'm going to try and meet up there. The last time we met, you know, I thought the guy had got a decent concept and idea. Things didn't move as quickly as I'd have liked. I was extremely frustrated by that, given the conversations that we'd had and the meeting that I had with him last June. And you know, as I say, you know, 12, 13 months on, probably going to go and sit down again and see where things are. Hopefully put to bed any of those differences perhaps that we've had. I don't particularly like it when companies suggest one thing and something else happens. In fact, I take it to heart sometimes. And that was one of them. I was pretty annoyed. So I'm hoping that finally they've got their act together and that the company's in better shape. And as I say, I think the cash position they've got and the fact that it's taken so long to do this business, shares are trading down at this level. It's just under the placing price now at spot 94, 95, 96. It's one of those ones that I think in the next month or two is probably going to be trading higher if the market finds a little bit of stability and traction. If it keeps going down like this, they're all going to keep coming down. And that's another thing, you know, there's certain areas, there's certain sectors that you can invest in which do well in times of austerity, you know, when markets are depressed. But ultimately, when the bulk of everything starts to kind of pull downwards, it will drag even some of the better companies with it. The upside comes from good companies. They'll surface a lot quicker than bad ones, and they survive. And that's what we've got to try and find, companies that have got enough cash and a robust kind of structure that allows them to survive in bad times. And if we can do that, I think that gives us great opportunity.
Marvellous, Doc. Thanks very much, fellas. Speak again soon.
Thank you, mate. Take care.
Okay, today's penny stock with potential is suggested by RevStar. It's Greatland Gold, GGP ticker. It's an exploration company focused in Australia, embarking on a drill program in an area historically rich in the resource. How many shares does the company have in issue? 1.4 billion. What's the current price and market cap? It's 0.317 pence, 4.43 market cap. How much cash or debt does the company have? No debt. On the 7th of April, the company raised 460,000 through a strategic placing and subscription of shares in the company. List three reasons you think this company has potential. Number one, lots of cash ready to be mobilized. Number two, Paul Johnson is buying up stock and a strong management team. And number three, news flow is imminent. Gold prices rising, as I mentioned earlier. Always have, if you can, a gold stock in your portfolio. It's a nice hedge against uncertainty. And that was Greatland Gold. Thank you, RevStar, for getting involved. GGP's ticker. Please do your own research on any stock mentioned in the podcast. These are just investment ideas we put out there. All right. Not every investment idea will turn out right. In fact, it could be a flop. So that's where you need to do your own, due diligence and your own risk reward management. It's essential. By all means, please get involved in this little feature here, the suggested penny stock with potential. Without your input, it wouldn't happen. And like I said, this podcast is about investment ideas. So the more ideas we can get out there, the better. Thank you very much, RevStar, for getting involved. That's it for the podcast. Thank you very much. Much appreciate for listening. And if you can do me an extra favour, if you go on iTunes, if you listen to the podcast on a regular basis, if you can give me a rating and review, I would be much appreciative of that. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.